It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Plastic pollution is growing relentlessly. According to the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, the world is producing twice as much plastic waste as two decades ago. But new chemical processes being tested at UW-Madison could help to upcycle low-grade plastics. You can be part of this recycling discussion by calling in with a question or comments. The number is 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. George Huber is professor of chemical and biological engineering at UW-Madison, director of its Center for Chemical Upcycling of Waste Plastics. George, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on the show today.
So in America, about 95% of the plastic we toss into our recycling bin goes to a landfill. That's according to Greenpeace USA. Why is recycling plastic such a challenge?
The main issue is the wide variety of different types of plastics. The chemical composition of the plastics we have is all different. We make flexible packages. We make rigid plastics. We use plastics in clothing. All that chemistry is slightly different, which makes it more challenging. We add all sorts of dyes, additives to the plastics that also makes it more challenging to recycle. We really, in Wisconsin, we should only be putting in the rigid plastics, rigid clear plastics into the recycling bin. We're pretty good at recycling rigid clear plastics. It's the other types of plastics we're not so good at, the flexible films, the mixtures of plastics, the fibers as well.
What about the issue with the plastic shopping bags and those really thin bags that are certainly clogging up oceans and elsewhere in the environment? What is the impact there in trying to break those down?
Yeah. So those are a type of flexible package that we call flexible plastics material. The infrastructure for collecting flexible plastics is just getting started. You should not put those in your recycling bin. There's store-side pickups that are starting to be developed, like Target has store-side drop-off for those flexible packages. So they're starting to collect those. And there's starting to become technologies to recycle and reuse some of those. Unfortunately, the local recycling facilities, most local recycling facilities can't handle those clear plastics. They kind of clog up the machines. You have lots of rollers and things like that in recycling sorting facilities, and those they clog up those rollers in the current recycling infrastructure.
The United Nations says plastic can take up to 500 years to break down. How does plastic decomposition affect the surrounding environment?
Yeah, you know, I was just in Guatemala last week, and one of the clear things we saw was all the plastic pollution. You know, in these developing countries, there's a lot more plastic pollution because they don't have as modern a waste management system like we have in the U.S. Even in the U.S., we have problems with plastic bags leaking into the environment and plastic material getting into the environment. We really don't know how long it takes to degrade. It depends on several different factors if it's in the ocean, if it's in the soil. But one of the big challenges we have is plastic pollution throughout the whole earth, both in the oceans and on the land. And we're kind of guessing how long will it take to degrade. We really don't know.
George Huber with us, UW-Madison professor of chemical and biological engineering, looking at a new method for recycling waste plastic. You can join in with your questions, your comments, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. George, turning to your lab, you're developing this new recycling method to convert low-value waste plastic into high-value chemicals. How does this method break down plastic? How does it work?
Well, the first thing we do is we thermally decompose the plastic. We heat it up to 500 degrees C without any oxygen, and we make what's called a pyrolysis oil or a plastic oil, okay? And that plastic oil, we then feed into a process called hydroformylation, where we react it with different chemicals. We use a catalyst, and then we make these aldehydes. And then the aldehydes you can use to make a variety of chemicals from that.
So this process, pyrolysis, and you mentioned 500 degrees Celsius. How hot is that? Can you give us like a comparison?
You use the heat from burning part of the plastics to get that temperature. It's 932 degrees Fahrenheit. You know, water boils at 100 degrees Celsius, so you're going to a lot higher temperature than that. But in the petroleum industry, 500 degrees Celsius is not too high of a temperature. We can do that with very minimal amounts of energy we have to put in to get to that high temperature.
And in that heating process, what happens with air? If you have air in there, what will happen?
Yeah, then you burn it. If you have, everybody has put plastic into a fire, okay? You see the vapors that come off of the plastics. Now you can imagine if you put it into a fire or you just heat it up without oxygen in there, then you're going to make an oil that or smoke, and then you can cool that down and you'll collect it and it will become an oil. If you have oxygen in there, then you're going to burn it and make carbon dioxide and water, which is not what we want to do.
So in that heating process and the breakdown, the melting of these chemicals, of these plastics, what about off gases? What happens there?
We collect all the off gases. We reuse those off gases to burn, to provide us with the process heat. But we want to use everything we produce in this process, we want to use to make either chemicals or fuels.
What are low-grade plastics that would be part of this process? Can you give us some examples?
Plastic bags are a great one. The technology works well with any type of polyolefin plastic. That includes polyethylene, polypropylene. But any plastic bags are great. Your milk jugs would be great. Your laundry detergent things would be great. So anything that's really made of a polyolefin, there's HDPE used piping. That's another type of polyethylene that we use all the time as well.
Would they have to be perfectly clean to go through the process?
No. One advantage of pyrolysis is you can take dirty feedstocks. And one of the challenges with plastic recycling really is contamination. Everything else that you put in the plastic, when you make a plastic, it's not just the pure polymer. You add all sorts of additives, you add dyes. Those are the things that make consumers want to buy your product. Then you use that plastic, there's dirt that gets in there. If you're packaging meat, there's might be some oils that get packaged with the meat. So with our technology, we've actually used what we call post-consumer plastics. So these are plastics that we collect from consumers, and then we sort and we actually use for in the laboratory for our technology.
And what type of high-value chemicals can this process create?
Yeah, so there's several chemicals we're making. One is surfactants. Surfactants are used in almost all your cleaning products, all your laundry detergents, your soaps. Those are all surfactants. The surfactant market is quite large. It's $45 billion global market. We can also make other alcohols as well that can be used as something called plasticizers. That's also used in plastic manufacturing. We can also take the chemicals we're making can also be used to make some niche, higher value commodity chemicals. We think our chemicals could be used for agrochemicals. And then we're also making the byproducts we're making would really be used to make fuels as feedstocks in the petroleum industry to make liquid transportation fuels as well. So and we are also evaluating a lot the new types of chemicals that the chemicals, the markets that our chemicals would fit into.
UW-Madison chemical engineer George Huber directs the Center for Chemical Upcycling of Waste Plastics as we discuss new methods to reuse single-use plastics and the challenge of it ending up in landfills. Call in with a question or comment along the way. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The vast amount of plastic waste ends up going to landfills, to incinerators, or as trash in our communities. We examine research underway at UW-Madison to find new uses for low-value plastics. Be part of the discussion on recycling plastic. Call in with a question, share concerns, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. George Huber is a professor of chemical and biological engineering at UW-Madison, stays with us. Let's bring in Tony now in Sturgeon Bay. Hi, Tony. What would you like to ask?
Good morning. The copper, aluminum, iron, scrap metal business has really proven to be very successful because it's actually a means of people earning a living by collecting iron and copper and brass and aluminum. Could the same thing be done for plastic? And if it required government subsidy to actually help pay for those who collect it, or does the system self-fund itself by the energy and the economics of recycling plastic?
Tony, thank you. George, can you take us into those economics?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. Right now in the U.S., we are paying to collect for someone to come and collect our plastics and to recycle them. We actually think in the future, and in the future, we think that plastic has such value that there would be value for people will actually pay you to pick it up. In other countries, they don't pay you to come pick it up. Actually, we have partners with the center I'm part of that are in Mexico, and they actually have what are called waste pickers. The waste pickers go around and they actually collect people's recyclables and they actually compete for who can get to the recycling bin first to collect those plastic recycles and reuse them. I actually lived in China about 8 or 9 years ago and someone said, oh, you can just put all your plastics in the trash because there's people that come through and they'll dig through your trash and they'll pull it up. So actually there's millions of people worldwide that are actually these waste pickers. They live on the they don't really have very good economic situations. They're usually very poor, and they actually go around and collect people's trashes. One of the things we're actually looking at is ways we can improve the livelihood of these waste pickers. Obviously, we need to give them better equipment, better skills to be able to do that. But you know what we're doing with these technologies is providing more value for that waste plastics, which we think would improve the livelihood of people who collect the plastics and other materials.
So as you do this research to improve the outcomes for the single-use plastics and low-value plastics, can you describe where you're at with this in the current phase of your research?
Yeah, so we've demonstrated the technology in the laboratory. We made, a few vials of the chemicals we want to make. By a few vials, maybe a couple of liters of products. We're now sending these to different companies who want to look at these certain chemicals. So we're looking there's several companies who use surfactants to make a wide variety of products. They're asking us to send us samples. We're preparing samples, sending these samples to them. And then we're thinking about ways we can increase the scale of this technology. We don't just want to be able to make a liter of it. We want to be able to make hundreds of gallons of it per day.
What would be scaling up? I mean, what infrastructure would be necessary in order to scale up to many different customers?
Yeah, you need to build a larger pyrolysis unit and a larger hydroformylation unit. There are companies who are commercially practicing pyrolysis technology. There's actually maybe about a dozen companies worldwide that are building or have built, are planning to build or have built plastic pyrolysis units where they're producing hundreds of tons, even kilotons of plastic pyrolysis oil already today. So potentially we could take some of their products and integrate that with hydroformylation to make these products. And that's some of the research that we're doing right now in the lab.
Talking about a new plastic recycling process with researcher George Huber, director of the Center for Chemical Upcycling of Waste Plastics at UW-Madison. You can join in with your questions and comments, 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Carol in Milwaukee. Carol, hi. What would you like to know?
Hello. My question has to do with the new chemicals that would be created. Could they in turn go all over the place, such as through detergents? You know, you smell them in the air sometimes, and cause new harm to unknown environmental things?
Carol, thank you. Could there be unknown leaching of these chemicals, George?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. We're always very concerned about the environmental effects whenever you deal with any types of chemicals. Most of the surfactants we produce are already being produced from petroleum today. So the chemicals we're making are not necessarily new chemicals. We're just making them from waste plastics rather than making them from oil.
And is it, are you able then to look at the long-term effects yet of what these oils could do, how they react when you reuse them again in, say, a detergent? Do you know enough of that endpoint?
This is one of the things we're starting to study. A lot of the surfactants we produce are already made from oil today, so the companies we're working with, they say, yeah, we think if you give us molecules like this, we think we know what they're going to look like. At some point, there's some more tests you would have to do to test that and verify that. But right now, we don't see any adverse really effects on human health. The main environmental advantage is the lower greenhouse gas emissions. Our products have 50 to 60% lower greenhouse gas emissions than making these products from petroleum.
Let's take another call now. Carol in Green Bay is here. Carol, what would you like to ask?
Well, I would like to say that I get a lot of plastic bags with bread or other items, and a lot of them have no recycling symbols on them. I take the ones with recycling symbols back to my grocery store to recycle, but I hate to throw the other ones out without any regular labels in the trash. Could I actively recycle those also? And I might add one other thing. I grew up with an Uncle George Huber.
Carol, thank you for that
connection.
Oh, excellent. George, go ahead.
Hey, thanks, Carol, for your question. That's a great question. There's a lot of things that aren't quite clear about plastic recycling. The polyethylene films you can definitely put in any of those store side drop-off containers. My guess is your bread bags would be okay to add to those things, even if they don't have the recycling symbols on. What you don't want to do is like a beef jerky package, which the issue with a beef jerky package is they'll put several different plastics together that aren't just polyethylene. They'll have a barrier layer called a barrier layer that's EVOH. And those, or anything with aluminum, those things would contaminate that waste stream. But a bread bag, that's mainly pure polyethylene. So that could go in your store side drop off, even if it doesn't have the recycling symbol.
How much waste plastic are you able to use in this process?
We can use any type of polyolefin. So those bread bags, polypropylene. Any type of polyolefin works very well for us. And that's the most common type of plastic that's used. I think 70% of your plastics that are produced are polyolefins.
Okay.
Polyolefin.
We have UW-Madison Chemical Engineering Professor George Huber with us, our guide to new approaches to recycling waste plastic, things ending up in the landfill. You can be part of the discussion as we look into recycling and the future of it. Call in with a question. You can share your comments at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. UW-Madison researchers attempt to find new ways to reuse low-value plastics that end up in landfills. We explore new technological processes to melt down waste plastic, turn it into new things like soaps and detergents, polyesters. Call in with a question. Add your comments to this discussion on plastics. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. George Huber is professor of chemical and biological engineering at UW-Madison, directs its Center for Chemical Upcycling of Waste Plastics. George, turning to greenhouse gases, industrial chemicals release greenhouse gases into the environment during production. And you've said that this new recycling method could reduce facility emissions by about 60%. Can you walk us through that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, every technology, everything we use, you know, produces some types of greenhouse gas emissions. So when you make a surfactant, you have to extract the oil. There's greenhouse gas emissions with producing that oil. You then have a whole refinery process that involves taking that crude oil, separating it out. There's a whole wide variety of products that you make, and then you make the surfactants. And not a lot of time during each step. There's also There's also still that's used in that process. So you have to think about how much CO2 is used to make that still. And in each step in that process, there's CO2 that's released. So what we're doing is we're taking a waste material, we're reusing that carbon as a feedstock, and our greenhouse gas emissions are 50 to 60% lower than the other processes to make surfactants from oil.
As you study these pyrolysis plants around the world, do they, you know, what do you learn about the pollution that they produce?
Yeah, it's really very little pollution. Okay. You monitor everything very carefully to make sure there's no air pollution that gets out. The largest one is actually built in Texas with ExxonMobil at one of their refineries. There's one that's being built. There's one Dow Chemical built, 120,000 ton per year plant in Europe. There's one built in Ohio that's, I think, 100,000 tons per year. So they're operating these. They're operating them safely. Most people don't even know that they're operating these plastic pyrolysis plants.
Is there a risk of explosion at all as you heat these plastics up to a very high temperature?
You're always concerned about the waste plastics catching fire, the oil catching fire. There's all sorts of safety regulations that we have to make sure that doesn't happen. I mean, the same thing is also true at the gas station, right? There's all sorts of safety issues. The gas station deals with working with a flammable solvent. And there's rules, regulations we have. You know, what happens in your car engine is also combustion, very high temperature, a lot higher temperature than pyrolysis. And, we're putting this flammable liquid in our gassing. So, yes, there are safety concerns and there are very certain, you know, this is not something you should be doing in your backyard.
You mentioned oil, refining oil. I mean, the process of oil refining also uses this process, in order to do that separation. I mean, can you call this like a refining process for plastics?
Absolutely. Yeah. Hmm. I think that's a very great analogy.
Let's take another call now. Gerald is in Burlington. Gerald, hi.
Hello. How are you?
Doing well. What's on your mind?
Say, I was listening to the program quite interestingly, and I've been in utility construction work all my life, and when PVC pipe came out in the late 70s, 80s, I was excited that we would be able to recycle that, but I soon found out that there was no market for it. I'm wondering if the professor has worked on that problem at all, or if he has any insight on it.
Gerald, thank you. How about PVC pipe, George, and recycling?
Well, yeah, that's a great question. Thanks, Gerald. And I think the one thing is the recycling industry has developed a lot in the last 5 years. There's really a lot more demand for recycled products. PVC for pyrolysis is a contaminant. We don't want any PVC in our stream. The PVC will decompose to hydrochloric acid. The hydrochloric acid will cause pitting in your pipes. Huge, huge challenge that we have. We want to remove as much of the PVC as possible. There are markets for PVC recycling in Europe. I think we need to continue to develop more PVC recycling in the U.S. It's one of the most commonly used plastics, but our technology cannot recycle pure PVC. PVC is also PVC pipes, which is pure PVC, is one thing that's more easily to be recycled because it's all concentrated. All the PVC is concentrated together. PVC is also sometimes used as a barrier layer. So there's small amounts of PVC that's added in different materials. And then that becomes a contaminant in downstream processes that we have to deal with in our pyrolysis technologies.
George Hero with us, Drexa Center for Chemical Upcycling of Waste Plastics at UW-Madison. You can join in the conversation on recycling, 800-642-1234. George, you say the recycling industry could soon adopt this new type of process recycling method. When could this happen? What do you envision as a timeline?
I think you're talking about anywhere from the next 4 to 10 years. The first thing that needs to happen is we need to validate the products we're making in different markets and get them tested as in different surfactant formulations. And we're working on that right now. We have several companies who have requested those samples. We then need to look at scaling up the technology and how we'll scale up the technology. The pyrolysis plants are built. There's also hydroformulation plants that are also built. Hydroformulation is a known existing technology that's used in the chemical industry, but they're not using it to convert waste plastics. They're using it for oil-derived products. So, you know, I think in the future you could modify some of these hydroformulation plants to feed in some of these waste plastics into these hydroformulation plants.
How receptive are these companies in wanting to change their processes and going from using, raw materials like oil and switching their processes up in a big way?
I think every company talks about it and they're interested in looking at that, exploring that. It's always challenging from an economics point of view to take that new risk for these new companies. You know, they have a certain business model, an established business model that works. Innovation is always challenging. Now, that being said, in the center we're part of, we have 23 industrial companies who are supporting us, providing technical support as well, who have been very, very open to some of these changes. But, you know, these technologies, they're expensive to develop. They take time to develop.
And in terms of the equipment or the materials that are necessary to create a plant, how does that plant come online, and could it serve a greater area than, say, a single company?
I think it's probably going to be one company who would take the lead with owning and operating that facility. Now, one company might do the pyrolysis, or a couple companies might do the pyrolysis, but one company might do the hydroformulation. Then there's another company that might, there's several companies they would sell their products to, and that would formulate them into different products. And the first issue you have to deal with any of these, getting these technologies to market, is the safety aspect. You want to make sure everything works safely there, you know, and so there's a whole design phase you have to go through with designing the equipment, making sure it's going to work, making sure it's going to be safe, and integrating it all together. And that's part of what chemical engineers call process design. And I actually will be teaching a class in process design next semester.
How do you ensure safety in your lab and work on process design?
Well, we have, before we start out any equipment, we have a safe operating procedure that we develop, where we talk about the risks, we talk about the protocols we use. All my students, they go through a round of safety training. We have a very good safety office here at University of Wisconsin. We try to have open communication, so if there's any near misses, we'll talk about those near misses, and we'll bring them up. So it's really about training the people in the right way and reviewing it, and making sure they have the right experience so that they can operate things safely.
How supportive is the federal government in this type of research? I think you're sponsored by the Department of Energy. Is that right?
Yeah, the Center for Chemical Upcycling of Waste Plastics is funded through a $10 million grant through the U.S. Department of Energy. So our support right now comes through the federal government.
UW-Madison,
and you're continuing to see.
Go ahead.
You're continuing to see more and more funding come from federal government for this type of work.
You feel like there is more support coming through the pipeline as you look at also, different initiatives the government is doing in the area of climate change. I would imagine that this would also, play into that as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
We have UW-Madison chemical engineering professor George Huber, works on processes to upcycle plastic that most often ends up in landfills and incinerators in the environment. Be part of this discussion on recycling, calling in with a question, sharing what's on your mind at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Most plastic, it simply can't be recycled, and that's according to Greenpeace USA. But UW-Madison chemical engineer George Huber and his team, they're designing technological processes that could turn low-value waste plastic into new products. Call in with a question or comments along the way, 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Linda in Heartland. Linda, hi.
Good morning.
Good morning. What's on your mind?
So, great discussion. It just sounds like, to me, more chemicals to replace chemicals, more resources. And where's the conversation about actually getting consumers to reduce their plastics, changing that behavior? An example is using reusable bags for groceries instead of using the bags that are at, say, a Target or a Meijer, and really demanding these big companies change their packaging for home composting.
Linda, thank you for bringing that into the discussion. And George, you are specifically looking at the chemical processes. I mean, that is part of your work. But what about the broader conversation around using less of these plastics?
Yeah, no, I think Linda brings up a great point. You should reduce, reuse as much as you can the materials that we've been given. But you know, the point is, we live in the plastics age. I think every age of society has been defined by the materials they use. You have the Stone Age, you have the Bronze Age, you have the Copper Age. Now, I think we really live in the plastics age. Most plastics have been discovered less than 100 years ago. The plastic production really ramped up in the 60s and 70s, and now they become the most commonly engineered material. We wrap everything in plastics. Our clothing we wear is plastic. The material we sleep on, our mattresses, that's all plastic material. So, you know, the point is, it's just such a versatile, inexpensive material, the plastics that we have. Now, most plastics, we have not thought about end-of-life use of most plastic material. And I think that's a challenge that we're seeing, is what to do with this waste plastic material. You know, some advantages of plastics is the health and safety benefits they provide for our food. You know, we expect when we open up a plastic, you know, wrapper of some potato chips or some plastic packaged meat, that's going to be safe. We're going to be able to eat it. It's not going to be expired, make us sick. We expect that the medicine we open, the plastic wrapping, is going to be safe to consume. Okay. And you know, there's lots of benefits plastics have provided for society, but we have not thought about the end of life use. And that should be combined with reducing, reusing material. But I'm not a real believer in zero use plastics, that we're going to be able to stop all plastic use and they're just going to go away. I think we have to think about end of life use, design plastics that are more recyclable, and then design new technologies that can better use the plastics.
Linda, thank you so much for calling in. Let's go to Bill in Viroqua. Bill, hi, what would you like to ask?
Hello, thank you for taking my call. I thought that, like Walmart and Target, the plastic bags you use for taking stuff out were going to be made primarily out of cornstarch, so that over a period of time they would recycle and disappear. But it sounds like with the show that's not happening. So I'm wondering what the situation is with cornstarch on plastic bags.
Bill, thank you. George, do you have insights there?
Yeah, and this also... Thanks for that question. This also goes back to Linda's questions. Can you make plastics that are biodegradable? Yes, you can make plastics that are biodegradable. That's a whole separate line of my research, as well as a large research effort throughout the world trying to make plastics that when they do leak into the environment, they'll biodegrade. The challenge with a lot of them is they're more expensive. They don't work as well. You have to use more material. Your CO2 emissions are actually higher than if you make a material that you can infinitely recycle or reuse. So that's one of the challenges with some of the recycling material. I think there's applications that it makes a lot of sense to use a biodegradable plastic. One of the applications where plastics are used is what's called agricultural mulching applications. In China, when they grow crops, they spread out these very thin polyethylene bags, and then they'll poke holes with that, and that reduces the weed input. But that causes huge plastic pollution. It's very, very hard to, once you add that plastic to the soil, it's very hard to get rid of it. So in China, they said, okay, now you can only use biodegradable plastics for these applications, plastics that are soil biodegradable. They're more expensive, but they will biodegrade. For a lot of applications, I don't know how much sense it makes to use those biodegradable materials because they're not as good, they're more expensive, and then they do release more CO2 when they biodegrade.
Would that catch on here as what China is doing?
I think for certain applications, we should be using biodegradable plastics, but that depends on the application that you use it for.
You know, I've been seeing these commercials from Michelin wanting to convert single-use plastic bottles into tires. They're working with Carbios. This is a French biochemistry company. Curious, could your team's recycling research benefit this type of effort?
I'm familiar with what Carbios does. They use a biological organism to break down the plastics, and then you could use that to remake the tires. The tires, they're butadiene and styrene. I think the chemicals we're making are different than what you would use for tires.
Okay, actually. So different application, different type of materials there. So the Chemical Upcycling of Waste Plastic Center wants to implement its recycling research by building its first commercial plant in Wisconsin. Can you give us a little introduction as to where the plant would be and how it would work?
Yeah, so we've developed the solvent-based technology to recycle plastic mixtures that we call STRAP. We're building a pilot plant right now with a professor at Michigan Tech University in Houghton, Michigan. And then ideally, we would build our first commercial plant in a location like Green Bay, Wisconsin. We've worked with this company called Convergent Energy. They've helped us. They'd be actually a great site. They have the feedstock. They would have the customers. They have the permitting in place to be able to implement this solvent-based recycling technology.
When you say the feedstock, can you explain what that looks like, what it is?
Yeah, it's basically flexible waste plastics that would be in manufacturing these plastic, a lot of plastic material, you have waste that's called post-industrial place waste. And that's waste that you can't recycle. Some you could recycle and reuse in the in your process, but some of this post-industrial plastic you can't because it's two or more plastics mixed together. So we would use that as a feedstock. We would pull out the polyethylene or the polypropylene, and then we would send that back to the manufacturer so they could reuse that material.
How promising are these processes, this technology, in changing our future with plastic and changing what happens to our environment? What are the prospects?
Yeah, well, we think plastic is a resource. We shouldn't be burning it at end of life use. We shouldn't be landfilling it. We should be reusing it. And these technologies allow us to reuse that plastic that would otherwise go to landfill or be burned.
Do you find that there is enough collaboration to achieve this?
We have 23 companies involved with this. There's lots of universities. We're working with universities in the U.S., Canada, Mexico, National Lab, Industry Association. At some point, we will need funding to build these plants. These are tens of millions of dollars to do the piloting work, then maybe a few hundred million dollars, maybe $50, $60 million to build. So at some point, we need investors to actually step up and put in the money to build this. But to date, we've done a lot of great laboratory work, and we have a lot of interest.
George, thank you so much for joining us and sharing about this research.
Thank you, Kate, for having me on your show.
George Huber is professor of chemical and biological engineering at UW-Madison, directs its Center for Chemical Upcycling of Waste Plastics. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.